This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Ohio farmer Steve Reinhardt, chairman of the United Soybean Board. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Syngenta, a global leader in seeds and crop protection products. Learn how Syngenta is working alongside growers and farmers to make the best decisions for now and the future of their farm at syngenta-us.com. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Steve Reinhardt next. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Syngenta, a global leader in seeds and crop protection products. At Syngenta, we talk to U.S. farmers and growers every day to hear their concerns and help them meet their challenges. From research and development to create innovative products to digital solutions to reduce water use and create healthy soil, we work hand in hand with America's men and women who feed and power the world. Our highly skilled teams are at the forefront of connecting technology with the oldest profession to utilize mobile apps, aerial imagery, and other advances to enable farmers and growers to make smart application and buying decisions for their farms. When the American farmer has a successful crop, we all benefit. And Syngenta is proud to work alongside the grower and farmer to make the best decisions for now and the future of their farm. Learn more about Syngenta and our support of the U.S. farmer online at syngenta-us.com. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Ohio soybean farmer Steve Reinhardt is the 2024 chair of the United Soybean Board, guiding 76 other farmer leaders and administering funds under the National Soybean Checkoff. Reinhardt says there is a paradigm shift underway in the industry as demand is growing for soybean oil for not only industrial uses, but fuel for vehicles and potentially airplanes. Reinhardt sees growing demand for soy, and that means opportunity for the industry and the farmers who supply it.
I think that we still have potential to growth in the oil industry. I think we still have potential for growth in the meal industry. Of course, if we're going to crush more soybeans for the oil content, we get more meal at the same time. And so I think that meal really is going to have an advantage going forward. We know that if we feed soybean meal to livestock, specifically poultry and young pigs, we have a better respiratory health that goes along with that, and usually higher energy levels in those animals as well. So that's a plus that we have. And then we also look at high-oleic soybeans and now being able to use those in a dairy cattle ration. And we're actually looking at some benefits as far as fat content and maybe even flavor through that profile as well.
I think it's wrong to use the word consequences, but the fact that you were able to develop the high-oleic soybean, if that oil works well in the fryer, who would have thought, as a consequence of developing that particular product, that you'd be able to use that in tennis shoes, in automobile tires, in motor oil, in asphalt, and in sundry different areas, that particular oil and its qualities would be a viable option?
Yeah, it's really a unique proposition for us, and we can tell the story that if we we have the pigs that are fed soybean meal, and we're going to take them to town. So we load them up in the trailer or the truck. The truck has tires made with soybean oil in them. We're wearing our Skecher shoes with soybean oil in them, and we can pull down the gravel road, which has been sprayed with a dust repellent made of soybean oil, and then out onto the highway, which has, like you said, had soybean oil in the asphalt. And the whole time we're riding in our nice, comfortable seats that are made with soybean oil and that foam. And so that's just one way that in many, many different aspects, soybean oil or soybeans in general can touch our lives. And that's one of the goals we have here, is to be able to use soybean product for every life, every day.
So I think about the transition that's taken place in the attitude of the consumer, and for that matter, even among our legislators and others of the globe, talking about we want to be better for the environment and we want products that are renewable. This is coming at the same time that investment through the soy checkoff have been in so many of these areas, it's like the two sides are coming together.
Yeah, it's really been a great experience that, you know, a lot of people want to say we have a food versus fuel debate, and really we don't. We have a food, we can do food and fuel, and that's one of the things we look at as we crush that soybean to get oil, whether we use it in industrial cooking, you know, situation, or maybe it goes into a fuel. We have an abundance of meal that we also can use to put towards our livestock sector, which helps to increase our protein, you know, availability. And it also gives us a way that we can also export that meal, which is readily usable for a lot of our friends over in the Asian part of the world. And they're feeding it to their livestock, and they're able to use it in their poultry, you know, production as well. And we're going to continue to see, as we work with places like the Soybean Nutrition Institute, on how we can continue to develop a product that we can look at as a human health type aid. And we know we have a couple products we can use through the WISH program to take into some relatively really poor countries and provide nutrition packets to those areas so that those kids can grow up, you know, with a healthy, nutritious thing to eat and not have to worry about where their, you know, next food item comes from. And that's one of the biggest things, is that we look around the world at instability and what that costs us, you know, through an unstable economic environment. If people can know where that food source is coming from and get that nutritious experience, they can tend to then build their economies and not have so much instability.
When you draw the board together and you look at your budget, are you thinking about this as a spending aspect or an investment aspect?
We're always looking at this as an investment aspect. You know, we have a soybean family that we can work with. And just to give you an idea, one of our work groups that we have is infrastructure and connectivity. And what we're doing there is we're concentrating on rail, river, and roads. And so one of our big projects is we can't invest in brick-and-mortar type projects, but we can do studies. And one of the studies we did here recently was if we can dredge the lower Mississippi River to 50-foot depth, how much further can we get those Panamax ships inland, get them filled? What is that return back to the farmer to be able to do that, cut down on that transportation rate, and then get that ship back out, you know, as quick as we can to get out on the ocean and to its destination? And those are a way that we can do that study. Again, we can't do the actual work, but maybe ASA will go to the Army Corps of Engineers and say, hey, you know, this is what we think we can do for the American soybean farmer. And then, you know, we can kind of get the ball rolling that way.
So when did biodiesel come about, and what are the studies that would suggest the potential of a sustainable aviation fuel market?
So biodiesel has been around for quite a few years, and so we've seen some different aspects of that. So we had biodiesel, which is the traditional diesel fuel mixed with soybean oil type product. We have a renewable diesel, and then now we're talking about sustainable aviation fuel. And that's one of the things that we think, if sustainable aviation fuel becomes a true demanded feedstock for the airline industry, just the growth potential in that product alone would be huge for the American soybean farmer. And so we want to make sure that we're able to use soybean oil in that product. And there as well, we're also working with Clean Fuels of America, and they're doing a lot of projects. New York is a huge user of biodiesel, and they're also using a lot of Goodyear tires, which contain the soybean oil in their fleet vehicles as well. And that's a big, goes a long ways in those heavily trafficked areas to clean up that air and provide a better environment for those citizens.
So if this is able to come to fruition with the sustainable aviation fuel, this isn't just a market for soybean farmers. This is the development of an infrastructure. This is the development of jobs in addition to those, as well as better for the environment. But looking ahead, if this is the paradigm shift, how does it change the focus of the studies that need to be done and the work that needs to be done, as now your industry, instead of having one side and an alternate, now ultimately has two viable means for domestic markets as well as global markets?
Sure. So another project we worked on was with the Port of Grays Harbor in the Pacific Northwest, and we have a lot of soybean meal that it gets exported through that avenue as well. And we were able to do a study that looked at the transportation from the Midwest to the upper Northwest and how we can facilitate the movement of soybean meal out to that port, and then how what they need at that port in order to get the ships loaded and then get them on their way over to Asia. And that's been a good marketing tool as well. And again, once that study was done, ASA was able to work with USEC, and they're able to leverage funding for the expansion of that Port of Grays Harbor. And that's another way that we can get that export market going as well.
In an example of the United Soybean Board, the directors looking ahead, you took sustainability seriously a long time ago. Has the sustainability effort led you an opportunity to markets in the globe? And does that same sustainability effort toward production now prove that the oil is a viable aspect to enter into and to be involved in the airline fuel industry?
Yeah, I think that's the word. So we probably had sustainability. I think when I first started with the Ohio Soybean Council, sustainability was first being discussed and talked about. And that was probably close to 15 years ago. So, you know, it's taken us 15 years to kind of look at that sustainability program, and it's been constantly building over that period of time. And we know that a lot of the practices that we use in the production of soybeans in the United States, whether it be no-till, using cover crops, any type of water conservation practices that we can use, reduce chemical applications, making sure that we put fertilizer where it needs to be and not, you know, generally just broadcasting across the field, has really paid dividends. And when you go to Europe, and even the last time I was in China pre-pandemic, and sustainability was not really an issue when we were there. We were there in November of last year, and sustainability is just a huge thing that the Chinese people are talking about now. So, you know, as we look at some of those foreign markets, even when you go into Colombia and they talk about sustainably producing aquaculture products, there's actually a label that they'll put on that aquaculture product, whether it be fish or shrimp, that says it was produced with sustainably grown U.S. soy. And that's a thing then that becomes a premium for them to market, and it helps build their economies even better.
And these were standards that the Chekhov dollars and the directors helped to develop and to create to satisfy that demand.
Yep, standards that they put together, and we've actually worked on a new project called Farmers for Soil Health, and on that project we actually have it's almost like a clearinghouse, if we could talk about a clearinghouse type a segment where I can put in my sustainability practices into a web-based program, and then another company such as Walmart can come over, they can look through my program, and if they like my practices, they can then buy my practices to relate back to their sustainability platform as well.
So you're answering the question before I ask it, but Brazil now produces more soybeans than the U.S. Brazil sells soybeans cheaper than we do in the U.S. So how does the U.S. soybean farmer remain viable domestically and still keep an edge and an advantage in the globe?
Yeah, so that's an interesting conversation to have, and we actually got to take a mission trip down to Brazil in January, and we still have some good advantages over them, but you're right, they produce a lot of soybeans and have the potential to produce a lot more. I think that there's a couple advantages I can think of right off the bat. We still hold an advantage on the infrastructure side, and I think that's what we continue to look at with Chekhov dollars on how we can keep investing in our infrastructure here in America to keep things moving efficiently. I think we have a huge benefit over on the technology side on how we can continue to drive innovation and come up with those new products, not only for soybean meal and soybean oil, but also those products that help us to mitigate drought, mitigate insect pressure, so that, you know, we can continue that sustainability story. And then even looking at the health and nutrition aspect, if we're looking at livestock nutrition, most of our beans in the United States don't have to be dried, so we have a better digestible protein at the end of the day, because in some of the other places we visited in Brazil, they're actually running them through a dryer three times in order to get them dried down to where they needed to be. And that produces less, you know, digestible protein when you do that, especially if they get overheated at the time. So I think we still have some advantages. I think that when you talk about the checkoff program working with our export program and providing information to our other partners as well, I think that's a huge advantage that we have in the United States, to have the groups, you know, thinking and working on behalf of the soybean farmer. And the nice thing about it is, even though we run the soybean checkoff and we also farm, you know, we raise corn, we raise pigs, we raise cotton. So the things that we're learning to do here and working on are also things that we can take back and help with those other commodities as well.
One of the headlines that is also not just in the agriculture sector, but in the consumer base, is food as medicine. Does soy have a stake in better nutrition, better health, because of better diet from better product?
Yeah, I think so. That's one of the places where we're working with the Soy Nutrition Institute Global, SNI Global. And we have actually now a childhood obesity study that we're doing with them, and it's looking at how soy can play a role in reducing childhood obesity. And we know that that's an issue that can lead to greater health problems down the road, and so we're looking at a way that we can do that. We also know that, you know, if we're feeding livestock with soybean meal, we have a good product for them to use that is going to be healthy for that animal and in turn produce a healthy protein back to us. And then if we look at using high-oleic soybean oil in cooking, we know we have no trans or saturated fats, and that's a good when it comes to those fried, you know, products as well.
Obviously, you want the most return on investment for the checkoff dollar, and you've mentioned the ability to leverage. If the soybeans farmer is successful, that would obviously mean opportunity for, say, the oilseed processors. It would mean benefits for other aspects of the industry. Steve, do you leverage dollars with other partners in industry to see better return?
Yeah, one of the things we love to do is leverage our farmer checkoff dollars, and we talk about how we can work with government entities, how we can work with WISH, who's got a partnership there with the government foreign ag departments and building out those programs, how we can work with even our other industry partners. We have some meetings coming up here that are called our technical advisory programs, and those are some research groups that we have projects with, and we may be providing them a little bit of funding, and then they're bringing in some funding as well. And then that continues to come up with new ways or new projects for us to invest in or be able to use soybean oil or soybean meal in. And so one of the things we look at is we want to, in our vision, we want a partner to deliver sustainable soy solutions, to every life every day. So I think, you know, right there in our vision, the first word we have is partner. So anything we can do to partner and leverage funds always helps everything go further.
So where do you believe that you would be as a soybean farmer and other soybean farmers would be if the critics were successful in disbanding a soy checkoff? What would you lose if you didn't have it?
We would lose a lot of things, because you wouldn't have that kind of technical program driver to basically tie all these other, you know, groups together. And so as we look at our unified export strategy with USEC and the partners that USEC uses, such as USMEF and USAPEAC, that's just another way that we're leveraging those dollars and getting more product exported through, you know, those channels. And so, We look at, again, like I said, we have some other groups that we've been able to bring in because they see the work we're doing and what we're able to accomplish, and they want to be partners with us as well. And so that just gives us another leg up on how we can promote things faster and get things moving, you know, further down the road.
One of it is dollars and cents. There is a referendum that comes with checkoffs, and there is reporting that comes back. But if you look at every dollar of the farmer that is collected and has invested or spent, what's the return?
This is a year where we have to do an ROI study. So the last one was done in 2014 to 2018, and it's really broken down into four parts. So when we talk about demand enhancing research, we're talking about $18 return back for every dollar, you know, invested. If we talk about production research, you know, it may be $9.42. And now we look at export promotion, we're looking at almost $18 again. So by the time that averages, for every dollar that we're investing, we're returning $12.34, you know, on average back to the soybean producers and for their effort in the checkoff program.
Well, Steve Reinhardt, we want to thank you. It's a busy meeting season for the winter, and it's about to become a busy planting season and raising the crop ahead. Thank you for taking time to spend with us here on this edition of Open Mic. It is Open Mic, and today, Steve, you've got the last word.
Well, thanks, Jeff. It's just great, and as we look at what the soybean checkoff's been able to do, we have one goal in mind, and that's to keep in mind the farmer that pays the checkoff and how we're going to manage those investments. And we're not only looking at, like you said, we talked a little bit about a dollar and cents ROI, but we talked about soybean foam and how that protects, you know, can help protect lives. And you know, how do you put a price on that? And you know, we look around the world at helping, you know, nutrition and making things more stable for families around the world, and that's just another way that we can continue to develop the use of our product and maybe help out our environment and be sustainably, you know, active at the same time.
Our thanks to Ohio farmer Steve Reinhardt, chairman of the United Soybean Board, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Syngenta, a global leader in seeds and crop protection products. Syngenta is working alongside growers and farmers to make the best decisions for now and the future of their farm. Learn more at syngenta-us.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.